This is a true story. It was a White Sox game. And I remember I went to opening day of the White Sox in 1983. And I had a dream the night before that everybody was in the same seat and the system didn't work.
Hello and welcome to NPR's Planet Money. I'm David Kestenbaum in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Adam Davidson in New York City. That was famously irascible. Is it irascible? Irascible? Fred Rosen, the former CEO of Ticketmaster, you heard at the top. David, I believe you are holding in your hand our indicator.
I am, and it is 6.6%. That is the increase in worker productivity on an annualized basis. It is slightly higher than last month's estimate, so that means we are getting more productive.
I feel that way, David. The podcast is coming together faster. My interviews are shorter. I'm writing faster. All of Planet Money is just becoming this efficient machine.
Really?
Well, you know that's absolutely not true. It just takes a long time. But, you know, David, I feel like productivity is the distance between the boring thing it sounds like when you hear productivity was up 6.6% and the actual fascinating thing that it actually is. I feel like that is one of the largest distances between what it seems and the fascination of what it is.
I suppose it's sort of one. Productivity going up is one good thing that comes out of a recession. I mean, this is a major driver of our economy, right?
Yes. I mean, basically, it's a major driver of everything. I just did another one of these interviews with a historian about life in the pre-modern world, and basically, productivity never grew, which means it took 90% of people or more to produce enough food for 100% of the people to live, or at least enough of the people to live who were living. Without productivity growth, you don't get economic growth. You don't get leisure time. You don't get longer lifespans. You don't get all of the benefits that the world has acquired over the last 200 years. Some might say all of the curses as well. You know, you don't get carbon exposure in the environment, et cetera. But productivity, without productivity growth, you don't have better lives year after year.
And some of that is can be like computers or better equipment, right? Some of it's just people learning to do their jobs better. Some of it's maybe not people not filing for overtime they should be filing for because we're in a recession and your boss might fire you.
Right. I mean, productivity growth over the centuries leads to better and better life expectancies, better lifestyles. Over the short period, particularly in a recession like this, you just don't know. I mean, I think you're probably right. There's probably a lot of people worried about losing their jobs, doing a lot of work without charging for overtime, you know, goosing the stats in the short term. But over the long term, you know, you want to see actual, real, genuine productivity growth.
Do we often see productivity decline as we come out of a recession if everyone's like, okay, I can spend time talking at the water cooler again?
I'm not sure. That would be a fascinating thing. Let's watch for that.
All right. But in the interest of keeping our productivity up, this is going to be a short podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Alex and I are hard at work at our next This American Life program about regulatory reform that's going to be on the air the weekend of September 18th, and also earlier that week on Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and This American Life over the weekend. We have been working really hard all summer to take regulatory reform and make it fascinating and sexy and exciting. And I don't know.
That Pew thing you did was great. The gathering of
live event.
It was a mix between, how'd you call it, a Supreme Court hearing and
American Idol.
Yeah.
Right. And we're going to be playing a lot from that Pew hearing next week on the podcast. And then, David, you and Hannah are really hard at work on another really important healthcare-related project.
Yeah, we, you know, we've had two sort of podcasts where we tried to look at different players in the healthcare system to try and figure out why it's so messed up. And we've done the doctor, we've done the patient, and I think the big piece left is the insurance companies. And they are a really interesting corner of this because, though much maligned, they are the economic actor in the system who it should be in their interest to try and make the whole system more efficient. You know, if they can charge people, if they can get MRIs cheaper, if they can get hospitals to give more efficient care and not order too many tests, then they should be able to charge lower premiums and they should just corner the market. But it doesn't seem like they are much of a force for driving down costs and making healthcare more efficient. So that is the puzzle we're focusing on.
That sounds like an economic riddle.
It does. And this is what we do have for you today. We do have an economic riddle. It's a pretty great one.
Yeah, and we even have an answer, too.
An answer from Emily Oster. She's that economist at the Chicago Booth School of Business who's been applying some basic economics to riddles from everyday life. And today she takes a riddle from a Planet Money listener about Ticketmaster.
You know, David, I became fascinated with Ticketmaster a few years ago. I did some reporting on it, and I learned, for example, that Ticketmaster's competitor, Ticketron,
Ticketron.
You remember that? The guy who ran Ticketron had been a high-level executive at NPR way back when, many years ago, long before you got here. But I talked to him, and I was saying, is Ticketmaster an illegal monopoly? And his take was basically, they are brilliant, cutthroat business people who have basically a legal monopoly, as far as he can tell, that... And he presented to me a puzzle, a riddle, if you will, that I worked hard to answer, which is this. Let's say you are a concert venue. You are Kestenbaum Dance Hall. And I'm Ticketmaster. I come to you and I say, hey, I am willing to give you a lot of money just for the right to sell tickets for Kestenbaum Concert Hall.
How much money are you going to give me?
Millions. Millions of dollars. The next several years of proceeds.
All right. Okay, fine. Deal.
Okay, right. It's an easy deal. But why in the world would I do that? Why would Ticketmaster give millions of dollars up front to Madison Square Garden, to, you know, just name your concert venue that you can think of, just for the right to sell tickets to them? It seems like a waste of money. Would you go, you know, to your dry cleaner and say, hey, I'm going to pay you in advance for all the dry cleaning that you're going to do for the next several years?
No, and I agreed to your deal because I couldn't see why you're making it. It seemed great to me.
Right. So what I learned is in any one instance, that would be nuts. It would be crazy just to do that deal. But there's something called a network effect that by doing that deal with enough different venues, Ticketmaster is able to basically lock up the concert ticket business. And once you lock up the entire concert ticket business for the whole country and you effectively eliminate any competition, suddenly, there's a lot of ways you can make a lot more money than you would if there was not this kind of almost legal monopoly.
So if I'm Bob Dylan, I always want to be Bob Dylan. I guess I could be Q-Tip, too, or whoever. Anyway, suddenly, I've got to go with Ticketmaster, right? Because that's just how it's done. That's where the audience looks for tickets.
And if I'm the audience, I have to go with Ticketmaster. It's a monopoly both ways. The concert promoters have to go with Ticketmaster. The concert ticket buyers have to go with Ticketmaster. And suddenly, Ticketmaster can negotiate every deal in a much better way. Which brings us to today's riddle. It comes from Nicholas Koss, a Planet Money listener. He wants to know why and this really drives me nuts. Why does Ticketmaster charge a convenience fee to print tickets he buys from their website? In other words, you could, for free or whatever, you know, nothing's for free with Ticketmaster, but you could wait for them to mail you the tickets or you can print it right there on your computer and then you have to pay for it. I hate this. This is so ridiculous. Alex Bloomberg and I asked Emily Oster and she figured it out right away.
So I think what he's thinking of is the idea that it seems like it would be cheaper for it is cheaper for Ticketmaster to let you print the tickets than to send them to you by mail. So why are they not charging you less or an equivalent amount? So I think the answer to this question is that you have to think about what people are willing to pay, as well as you have to think about the demand side as well as the supply side. So the instincts here are about the supply side, that this is costing you less, it's costing Ticketmaster less to supply. But if on the other side, people are willing to pay much more for the convenience of being able to print something out and just go and not have to wait at the counter to pick up the ticket or not have to wait and worry about is the mail going to come, is it not going to come. So people are willing to pay something for that, and Ticketmaster is charging them for that. Now, if there were many places to purchase your tickets, if this was very competitive, you could buy your tickets online at Ticketmaster or Ticketron or, you know, Ticketix or Ticketweb or, you know, there were millions of these things, you would actually expect, I think, the prices to reflect more of the costs that the Ticketmaster-type activity faces. So you'd expect, I think, the prices of printing things out to be lower, because when we think an industry is very competitive, with many, many different people in the industry, we typically think that price is going to be equal to marginal cost, equal to the cost of providing that good on the margin, that ticket. In an industry like the one the Ticketmaster is in, where they're really the only game in town, they're effectively a monopolist on online ticket sales, they can then price in a way that reflects the fact that reflects different things about demand conditions. And I think in this case, what it's reflecting is that people are willing to pay more to print out their tickets than they are to get them by mail.
Right. Which is one more reason why it was so smart of them or so sneaky of them to lock up all these multi-year
Agreed.
Deals.
Right. Yes. Yes. Being a monopolist in that industry is very good and also hard to do because doesn't seem like there should be any reason that you can't have Ticketweb and Ticketron and other things, and they've managed to figure out a way to like generate a monopoly.
So, Adam, it seems like we have a semantic problem here. It's not really a fee for your convenience. It's really what economists call a rent. Ticketmaster can charge you a ridiculous amount, not because they've come up with the most brilliant solution to the problem of how to get you the ticket.
No, it's – I guess convenience fee sounds better than monopoly rent, which they maybe more truthfully could have called the thing. But basically, by having this business model of preventing competition – you are sitting there at your computer and you're not thinking, wait, Ticketmaster wants to charge me $4 to print the ticket at home. I'll just go to Ticketweb and print the ticket for $3 there, or Ticketron and print it for $2 there. Or eventually all these competitors would say, you don't have to pay anything because we want your business. But since Ticketmaster is my only option, then it's just they can just charge whatever the market could bear, and apparently that is some silly amount, because I think the last time I got Ticketmaster tickets for a Springsteen concert, I think I paid the convenience fee myself, which I feel badly about. Hey, David, can I tell you a few other little things I remember from my Ticketmaster reporting of a couple years ago? So the NPR guy who ran Ticketron, he explained why they got their butts kicked by Ticketmaster. So he said Ticketron, and I remember this, they used to be in like Tower Records and other places, and you'd go there and buy your tickets to the concert, which was a big deal. It was you no longer had to go to the Roxy or go to Madison Square Garden. You could just go to this one central location. And he said Ticketron's business model was to basically, there was virtually no convenience fee. It was like 15 cents per ticket, but they would charge hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to Tower Records for the machine, for the computer and the whole system for printing the tickets. And Tower Records' idea was that if I went there to buy tickets to the Duran Duran concert or whatever, I would go in and then buy some Duran Duran albums.
Did that happen? Did you buy a lot of Duran Duran?
I believe there was a Duran Duran phase, yes. And I did see them in the Garden in like 1982 or something. I was young. And then Ticketmaster came along, and from anecdotes I heard from friends of Fred Rosen, he basically saw the people scalping tickets out front. Because remember, tickets used to be to a concert were $18, $20. And you go out front and there'd be people selling them for $80, $100. And Fred Rosen saw those scalpers and said, this market can – we can charge a lot more than $15 or $20. We could charge $80 or $100 or $400. And so his model was – make it as easy as possible to sell the tickets. Anyone can be a Ticketmaster outlet. You can get it as easy as you want. And then we're going to just charge as much as we possibly can for the tickets, for the service fees, for everything.
Because then we can reach those people who are willing to pay more.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's not this primary market of people who pay $20 and then a secondary market that the concert venue or the ticket company gets no piece of where people are scalping tickets. So the Ticketron guy said they just had a better business model. They had a smarter idea.
Smarter, he said we just got beat.
He said we got really, really, really beat, that Fred Rosen was a genius. A genius, I mean, not to say like we benefited. It's kind of annoying to many of us. But I'm sure he has a story to tell about how he made the world a better place. But in thinking about this, I was thinking, you know, when you print your airline tickets – they encourage you to do it, and there's no extra fee. So, you know, that's a market where there's competition. If there was one airline, they'd probably charge you a whole bunch of money just to print your boarding pass.
You wait. There will be a fee.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Hey, David, one last thing before we wrap up. A couple apologies about Friday's podcast. I said something that was based on a misunderstanding, and it was factually incorrect, and I want to correct it. In my conversation with Barney Frank, I said that some of his staffers had told me that they – I forget the exact words – but that they were going to get all the regulatory reform business done this year, and then that was it. I have heard that from other people, but I have not heard that from Barney Frank's staffers, and I very much apologize for misleading or – I mean, I misspoke. I, in the heat of the conversation, I said something incorrect. I apologize to Barney Frank, to his staff, to our listeners. David, I apologize to you personally.
Thank you. It's been bothering me.
Also, I've gotten beat up a little bit on the blog and in our emails for sort of touting Apple and making some big statements about how Apple is so awesome. And you know what? They're all right. I sort of whipped that together. And I like to admit it when I'm wrong. And, you know, it was not the deepest and keenest of insights I've ever provided. And I will work harder.
There you have it, folks. Quality journalism, as we said, it takes time and a correction section. That is it for today on Planet Money. Send us your economic riddles. You can write to us at planetmoney@npr.org.
Yeah, we're getting ready to have Emily Oster back. And so please send us your questions. And also, please do check out our blog. The big unemployment report for August is coming up on Friday. Big news. Are we almost out of a recession? Are we deeper in one? Stay tuned. We'll have lots of charts so you can see what's going on out there in the job market. That's at npr.org/money.
I'm David Kestenbaum.
And I am Adam Davidson. Thank you for listening.